Montana's income and spending are up. Good evening, I'm Sarah Jovetic.
And I'm Courtney Anderson, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Flathead reporter Katchen Fry tells us about some special equipment that helps people with disabilities enjoy the great outdoors. And in our feature interview, news director Sally Mock talks with Montana Film Commissioner Denny Staggs about some made in Montana films that are getting a lot of big time attention. Montana's collected more taxes than expected, but state spending is also going up. Legislative Fiscal Division analysts said today state revenue is nearly $1.8 billion with less than a month left in the fiscal year. That's an 11% increase compared to this time last year. The main drivers are individual income and corporate license taxes. Income taxes are up 15.3% to just over $1 billion, while corporate taxes are up nearly 37% to $156 million. Analysts say the state will spend nearly $523 million more by 2015 than this year. That's a 14.3% increase. Senate Minority Leader John Sesso says half that increase is one-time tax relief, pension obligations, and switching the source of some education funding.
And in other news from around the state, police in Missoula are investigating after a woman said she was attacked and robbed by two men after her car ran out of gas. Detective Scott Pastian says the woman's car ran out of gas at about midnight yesterday. Pastian says the woman was approached by two young men and she thought they were going to offer to help her. Instead, one man grabbed her arm and threw her against the car and onto the ground. He then took her wallet from inside the car, removed cash, and both men ran away. The woman suffered minor injuries in the attack. The woman said both men were Caucasian, about 6 feet tall and 18 to 25 years old. One was skinny and had a goatee, while the other was clean-shaven.
The director of the Peace Farm on Duncan Drive in Missoula's Rattlesnake Valley says everyone would benefit if the city could purchase the 13-acre site from Missoula County Public Schools. Missoula Mayor John Engen seems to agree and will officially propose that very idea to school board trustees this evening. The Peace Farm is a partnership between the Environmental Studies Program at the University of Montana and Garden City Harvest, a local food security nonprofit. Farm director Josh Slotnick says the school property includes an almost 10-acre vegetable farm and 3 acres used for public playing fields. The Peace Farm signed its first lease agreement with the school district in 2000.
And we're right now in the second of two consecutive 10-year leases. So the connection with the school district is that this is their property. And they've been a wonderful partner and really visionary in choosing to work with us and do something kind of outside the box, typically what's done on unused school ground. And we've been able to use this property to grow tens of thousands of pounds of food for low-income folks and to offer educational programs for MCPS kids as well as university kids.
Engen will offer the school district $1.2 million for the property. Slotnick says the city's been interested in the site for at least 5 years.
This land is, I'm pretty sure, in the comprehensive growth plan for this area. The hoped-for designation was parkland. It's public land. And the mayor saw this as a great public asset.
He says everyone involved would win if the city could acquire the site.
What the city gains is we have a reliable source of high-quality food for low-income people. We also have a beautiful chunk of open space. We have a place that provides a therapeutic employment program for teenagers, a spot that's a live working farm where we do lessons in kind of soil science and plants, et cetera, that fit with our school district's science goals. We work with 3,000 school kids a year.
Slotnick quickly adds the deal would also provide the school district a $1 million windfall. He points out the city would use no new tax dollars to buy the Peace Farm. He says the funding would be provided by a mix of open space bond monies in a private fundraising effort.
A former Missoula County Sheriff's deputy who was fired over an inappropriate relationship with a 17-year-old boy has pleaded guilty to two misdemeanor charges. KECI-TV reports Larry Mitchell Schwint pleaded guilty today in justice court to official misconduct and attempted unlawful transactions with children. Charging documents say Schwint put an ad on Craigslist as a female named Sarah, promising to have a sexual relationship with the boy if he first met with Schwint for a sexual encounter. Detectives say Schwint acknowledged the relationship and creating the ad. Schwint was fired in January after an internal investigation prompted by a report from the boy's parents. The Missoula County Attorney's Office has agreed to a 6-month suspended sentence for Schwint.
Skiing, biking, hiking, and water sports are among a growing list of opportunities becoming more accessible to people with disabilities. Catch and Fry reports on an effort to let people know that these opportunities exist.
There are different programs and equipment available to help people with disabilities in the Flathead stay at home or get outside, depending on the day and the need. Kalispell Medical Equipment's Laura Poitra says the hitch is letting people know what's available. KME and Dream Adaptive teamed up to host a demo day Saturday, highlighting adaptive recreation equipment.
I think that unless you're directly involved in the activities that are out there and you're aware and connected to what is available, you don't know. And so some folks that are new to using a wheelchair maybe are unaware, or awareness just to the general public to see what is out there.
KME provides equipment for home care, to rent in some cases, or to buy.
Wheelchairs, walkers, oxygen, CPAP equipment, power wheelchairs, scooters, ramps, bracing. There's just so many different things for folks who have long-term chronic disabilities, as well as those that have been recently injured or have undergone a surgery and are looking for stuff to help them rehab and get back to where they were.
Dream Adaptive's Cherie Dubow says they're a nonprofit organization providing year-round outdoor adaptive recreation opportunities.
We have a very well-established alpine ski program that we do at Whitefish Mountain Resort. We have a five-year summer water sports program where we do water skis, tubing, boating, kayaking, canoeing on Echo Lake.
Dubow says Dream is also working on a rock climbing program, hiking and biking, and golf. She says the list of recreation opportunities keeps growing.
And it's come a long way. I grew up with a father who was disabled in 1962, and it was so much different then. You know, you were so restricted on what you can do. But now, just look at the equipment that's here. You know, you have the alpine sit skis, the slider skis. Look at that chair, the track chair, the catamarans and the rafts and the sit water skis and hand bikes. There's just so much.
Dubow points out a catamaran raft that you can lock a wheelchair into and a camouflaged motorized wheelchair with a heavy-duty track for hunting, as well as the hand bikes that sit low to the ground with pedals designed for hand pumping instead of using your feet. Tom Savage of Polson says he got his hand cycle about 2 years ago.
It's the first one that I've actually owned. I'm actually thinking about upgrading to a different model. It's more of a racing. I mean, this is a race version as well, but I want to check out some of their newer models that they have. You lay down in a prone position, pretty much just your head, kind of head and shoulders comes up in the back, so you're really aerodynamic.
Savage's current bike is pretty low to the ground with an upright seat, two wheels in the back, one in front, and the tires are skinny with a slick tread. He was paralyzed in a car wreck in March of 1994. Savage says biking is a fairly new pastime for him. He ski raced professionally for a time with the Winter Park Disabled Ski Team in Colorado. He says updates to adaptive bikes keep coming out, with modifications coming from people with disabilities.
It's exciting to see. You know, you've got a lot of opportunities for people with disabilities to be able to get out and enjoy the freedoms that they had, you know, once before, or maybe they've never experienced that freedom. So it's nice to see these people coming together and trying to build equipment for them, allowing them to get outdoors and live life. So,
some of the other hand cycles have thicker tires with rougher tread and are higher off the ground for off-road cycling. There's a bike with a power assist electric motor and wheelchairs designed for tennis and basketball. These are high-end bikes and wheelchairs, the sporting division of Invacare, and they range in cost from $2,000 to $10,000.
But we can take almost anybody water skiing. We can take quadriplegics, paraplegics, amputees, blind.
Jerry Mayhew with Dream Adaptive says they also work with people with different cognitive disabilities. He points out different features on the adaptive wakeboard and water skis the program has.
These are outriggers, and they're much like training wheels on a bicycle. When somebody is real new at this, this helps them get up on the water more easily, quicker, with less effort. And this thing is almost impossible to tip over.
Mayhew says one of the popular water sports for the kids is when one or several climb on board the large yellow float tube they have for tubing.
So we get them on here with a couple of helpers, and we just let them float around and putz around in the bay a little bit, you know, and get them used to the water. And we've had kids that were deathly afraid in the morning, and by afternoon we couldn't get them out of the water.
Participating in the dream activities is free, and they work with all ages. Cherie Dubois says they continue working to develop new opportunities.
We live in wonderful Northwest Montana, and there's a lot of outdoor activities, so I'd like to bring those to the disabled people.
Dubois says through adaptive equipment and these programs, there are a lot of opportunities for people to get out of the house, even if they're in a chair. Katrin Fry reporting from the Flathead.
Montana's film industry has had a busy couple of years, with three feature films produced in the state and two of them making it to the Cannes Film Festival in May. The third will premiere at the Los Angeles Film Festival this Friday. Film Commissioner Denny Stagg sat down with News Director Sally Mock to talk about those films and Montana's growing film and television industry.
We're really excited about the way filming is working in the state of Montana right now. It's exciting. We had our last three major feature films have all gone to world-class film festivals. And it just shows how great and talented our crews and services are in here in Montana and how awesome Montana looks on the screen.
This kind of production, though, waxes and wanes, doesn't it, Denny, in terms of major films being filmed here? I mean, you'll have a rash of them, and then there might be a little bit of a lull before, or even a long lull, before a major film studio comes, right?
Yeah, it's, you know, there's stories, and there are creative people looking for backdrops and places and character in a location. And so it's cyclical, or it ebbs and flows. There's no real predictability to it. You know, we're always offering ourselves out there as a location to the industry to come and shoot in Montana, and we think that we have a lot of value that gets on the screen for the film and can add a lot to those productions. So sometimes it's a dry spell, and sometimes they just all come. And what's really nice is when Montana does get on the big screen or the small screen, there's a huge impact. We see immediate results from that, from those shows.
Results like?
Well, for instance, the Super Bowl ad that had the farmers, that was the number one
ad.
You know,
what a wonderful
those,
ad.
Many of those images were in the state of Montana. They have impact on the screen. You know, Jimmy P, the film that went to Cannes, one of the films that went to Cannes, you know, the first thing you see is East Glacier.
Because that was filmed
in Blackfeet Reservation. On the Blackfeet Reservation, and which is a phenomenal backdrop for that. For any place to be. You know,
and that film is a true story about a Blackfeet World War II veteran. Right?
Yes, he came to this hospital experiencing, you know, dreams and problems, and they actually found this anthropologist, a French anthropologist, studying, you know, psychotherapy, and these two people came together, and he basically helped Jimmy come to terms with this pain he was feeling.
And when a film like that does its shooting in Montana on the Blackfeet Reservation, a lot of locals are involved. Mm-hmm. Many of those in that case were Native Americans, right?
Yeah, there was over 115 Native Americans involved in that production across the board, from extras to crew to interns. The documentary about the film had, you know, Native Americans in that crew as well. And so it was really, that was what was extraordinary about the film process for the French director and the French assistant director, which is more like you would think in theater, the way it is different than film. But the French came in and researched and spent 2 years in the community making connections, and it was really important for them to have a Native American element in their production process. They wanted that. They celebrated that.
For authenticity, if nothing else,
yeah.
I'm sure. And the other film that showed at Cannes this year that was shot in Montana is a film called Nebraska, but much of it was shot in Billings.
Correct, yeah. Alexander Payne, who is, you know, two two-time Academy Award-winning director and writer. He
made Sideways, among other films.
He did Sideways and about Schmidt and Election and The Descendants. You know, it goes on and on. He's highly respected and just an amazing guy. He shoots for location authenticity. You know, it didn't matter to him if there was another state that had more money to give them that looked like Montana. He wanted it to be these two men to be who are featured in the story to be from Montana and to take this journey down into Nebraska. He's from Nebraska, Alexander Payne is, and so he usually has a lot of his films in that Midwestern feel. Actually, The Descendants, which was shot in Hawaii, was actually quite a departure from that kind of character that he likes in his locations. So it starts in Billings, and it just is the backdrop for this film. It just sets the tone for this story. This small
father-son story,
you know, this small town, you know, and Bruce Stern keeps trying to leave town to go walk to Nebraska. And finally, his son, who's played by Will Forte, decides he's going to drive him down. And it's their relationship. And it's a very sweet story. And I think we're going to hear a lot about that one here on the States.
And Bruce Stern won Best Actor Award at the Cannes Film Festival this year. And I want to talk to you about that festival. You went for the first time. Those of us who've never been to the festival certainly see it as one of the more glamorous events that goes on.
Yeah.
How was it to be there among the glitterati?
It was extraordinary. It really was. You know, the French just celebrate cinema so wonderfully. They just love it, and they embrace that art form extremely well, and so the going into the theater is quite a spectacular event. It's this extremely large red carpet that goes up these big steps into the theater, so that it's like these stars ascending to this place. and everybody has to wear tuxedos. You cannot be at least not everybody, but the men wear tuxedos, the women wear gowns. It's everybody dresses up. There's no homage. They won't let you in if you try to be, you know, avant-garde style, you know. And so it was extraordinary, and what a great opportunity to go and promote Montana. You know, we had two films of 19 in the competition, and it was wonderful. We were wonderfully received. Everybody was just like, Montana, we love Montana, and there's such an allure to Montana, and it's worldwide. I felt that, you know, I traveled over 20,000 miles this last year promoting Montana to the industry, and, you know, Toronto, New York, L.A., Austin, Texas, to promote our films and our film industry. And France, they just loved it as much as anyone. And
the allure is, of course, our great scenery, but also that it's still seen as the Wild West, I assume.
Open space, open expanse of land, you know, and the big sky, really. I mean, and we say the big sky now, it's the big sky laundryette, it's the big sky this, but the big sky is really an interesting element. And what I was talking to a photographer here at the Big Sky Documentary Film Festival, and I said, what do you think it is about the visuals of Montana that makes it so amazing? And he said, the air is so dry, there's not an ounce of moisture in it, and so the lens can see for miles and miles and miles, and it's crystal clear. If you get in other locations where there's just a little more moisture, it warps the lens and changes the perspective. Mm-hmm. And so it's that depth of field that you get here that you don't get really anywhere else.
Montana now has a stable of production crew that it didn't have a few years ago, right?
That's not necessarily the most known fact about Montana in the industry, which we're trying to change. And the industry has changed a lot. I mean, typically filmmaking crews were just, it was about films and film cameras and, you know, big trucks and lots of C-stands, which are these things that hold lights up. And now the film crews have become lighter, and our two universities have really responded to that. You know, the media arts program here at the University of Montana and also at MSU, their extraordinary film program there. And these students that are coming out of there, they want to stay in Montana. They want to tell their stories here because you really can now. You can, you know, cyber commute and you can deliver your product much easier than it was in the older days. So you have Warm Springs Productions here that's doing amazing work. Over 70 employees. It was just an article I read in the Missoulian about they're doing the Wardens, they did Mountain Men, and then you have Grizzly Creek in Bozeman that does the Casey Anderson's Wild America for, you know,
these are
Animal
TV
Planet.
Shows,
these are
yeah.
TV shows. Mm-hmm. But it's also showing that we have really extraordinarily talented, trained crew that live in this state. What's great about our crew, too, that I tell everyone in our services is they're very versatile. They can work on big shows. They can work on small shows. They can work on commercials, national commercials, regional commercials, print, photo. They do it all. There's not a specialty, you know, oh, there's just this many of this type of crew, and an indie crew versus a studio picture crew.
And the state offers tax credits, which every state, I think, does now for filmmaking. And you also have a new program called the Big Sky Film Grant, where the state is actually handing over a chunk of cash to aspiring filmmakers.
Yes, we decided that, you know, we have a very modest tax incentive. You know, we're not in the top. We're not in the middle. We're towards the bottom of our tax incentives. We needed something to sort of lift that up. A bit. And so we created the Big Sky Film Grant to, you know, incentivize these productions that might come in and try to get them as close to 20% as we can, giving them cash in hand 30 to 60 days after they wrap principal photography. But then we opened it up more to our resident filmmakers. We wanted to give our resident filmmakers an opportunity to get their pictures made as well. So we created a portion of this grant to be the resident filmmaker grant, where anybody that's a resident of the state of Montana who has a feature film credit can come in and apply for a grant if they have a project that's going to shoot in Montana.
Of up to $50,000.
Up to $50,000. So
which could really help somebody.
It certainly can. I mean, I really feel like if we can help get a picture made and let the world see Montana and keep our crews and services working in the state, that helps develop our crews as well and keep them working and enhancing their skill sets.
You're off to Los Angeles soon to attend the premiere of, I think, one of the most anticipated Montana-made films in a long time, and that's Winter in the Blood by the Smith brothers, Alex and Andrew, and that's going to premiere at the Los Angeles Film Festival on Friday. That will be exciting.
We're very excited about that. These guys have just worked so hard to get this movie made, and it's such a, you know, wonderful Montana. I mean, it's such a true Montana story, I should say, about Montanans and our world. And I think that it's, you know, the James Welsh novel coming to the big screen is going to tell a lot of people about the true, you know, what the fiber of Montana is. And the little that I've seen of it in trailers, just the High Line looks amazing. It's an amazing part of Montana, 360-degree views. So we're really excited for the industry in Los Angeles and the world coming to Los Angeles to see films, to see Montana and see this story. It's another story that had – and production that had a tremendous amount of diversity in the cast and crew, as well as Jimmy P. But every ounce of this story – and production is Montana, all of it.
Well, I have been speaking with Montana's film commissioner, Denny Staggs, who's caught us up on all the film activity recently in Montana, and certainly looking forward to seeing Winter in the Blood when it premieres in Montana. Denny, thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And in tonight's weather forecast for west of the Divide, tonight calls for mostly cloudy skies with a chance of showers. Lows will be in the mid-40s. Tomorrow calls for more clouds with a chance of thunderstorms. Highs will be in the mid-70s. For central Montana, tonight showers and thunderstorms are likely with lows around 50 degrees. Tomorrow will be mostly cloudy with a chance of thunderstorms. Highs will stick around 70 degrees. And for southwest Montana, tonight calls for scattered showers and thunderstorms with lows around 50 degrees. And tomorrow, rain showers are also likely throughout the day with highs around 70 degrees. Now for the editorial comments of Pat Williams.
There are a few cities in America where history is out there for everyone to see. We don't often experience whole cities where success and despair are partners, growth and decay lie side by side, and history's tumult remains visible. I grew up in such a place, Butte, Montana. Last month, I took a vacation, well, a five-day weekend, and visited another place like that, Detroit, Michigan. Yes, Detroit. I'd never been there, but my friend Brian Upton, who grew up north of Detroit, invited me to visit. He has lived in Missoula for many years, and a few months ago I had shown Brian around Butte, and he reciprocated by taking me to and around Detroit. We both appreciate cities with profound pasts and hopeful futures. Both Butte and Detroit are products of immigrants, proclaim architecture from the Gilded Age, have ethnic-studded populations, and enjoy a history of ever-revolving migration. In almost all criteria, with the ironic exception of numbers of people, both Detroit and Butte are urban. Early dependent upon trade and agriculture, the states of Montana and Michigan had these two cities of excitement and ferment, international centers which were the potter's wheel for much of their state's commerce and production. Both cities were dependent on day laborers and a single industry. In Detroit, automobile production, and in Butte, mining. Their economic heydays spanned most of the 20th century, and during World War II, both cities were a vital piece of democracy's arsenal. Detroit, with its prodigious production of tanks, planes, and trucks, and Butte, one of the largest mining districts in the world, was America's paramount copper supplier during World War II. That soft metal was essential to ammunition, as well as for the sinews of ships, radio equipment, planes, and tanks. Workers built both cities by hand, and organized labor owes much of its early national success to Detroit and Butte. The early auto workers' unions, of course, began in Detroit. Butte, the Gibraltar of labor, was the home of the nation's miners' union number one. Henry Ford revolutionized production everywhere with the creation of the automobile assembly line. And in Butte, the development of new and safer mining technologies changed the hard rock mining industry around the world. The yesterdays of these two cities are evident in the remains of vacated buildings standing among the new. The promise of their tomorrows shines bright in the resiliency of their people and in the optimism inherent in the greeting of every new commercial opportunity. These cities, although far, far different in size, share those rare characteristics of real cities. A history that sticks to the ribs, an unwillingness to forget, and an eagerness to persevere and succeed. Such cities are bastions of both memory and hope, whose residents hold much more than fondness of place. They need their city. It feeds them, secures the memories of their youth and their sense of well-being. Although wind whistles through the skeletons of a few of the homes and buildings, the cities themselves are stable and comforting. I think hard times, survival, and optimism have their uses. Both cities now have less than half the population of their once upon a time, but such places have a way of beating the odds and the obituaries. Detroit's recovery, they call it its comeback, and I am assured it is well underway. As for Butte, those of us who know that old girl insist on saying comeback. Hell, she never left. Well, this is Pat Williams coming to you from the MPR studios of KUFM Radio on the campus of the University of Montana. My thanks for listening.
Pat Williams is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtbr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Courtney Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Jovetich. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.